Bloomberg on the Economy with Mike McKee and Carol Masser. Listen on demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Now available free for both iPhone and Android devices.
And maybe we can even start on a different subject here with Russ Kostrich. He's from BlackRock. Russ, you've got a great paper out on what's going to happen with the fiscal cliff, which is what we essentially want to talk about. But I have an interesting question here for you. Investors, we're hearing a lot of people say that the market has started with it the negativity we've seen in the last couple of weeks, because now it looks like Mitt Romney has a chance to win, which would mean that he would prefer a Fed chairman who does not want to be as easy as Ben Bernanke, and that would be bad for the markets. Is that the calculation that we're seeing these days?
You know, that's an interesting theory. I'm not quite sure that I buy it. I mean, a couple of reasons. First of all, if you think about the impact any president, President Romney or President Obama, is going to have on the Fed, Mr. Bernanke's term is not up until 2014. Now, yes, investors do look ahead, but I'm not sure I buy the fact that the market is already handicapping his choice. Second of all, I think if you look at the recent market behavior, it's not that surprising what's happened. We had a big run-up, an unusual run-up in September, you know, historically a weak month. And what's happened is you have an earnings season, which, while not awful, has exposed the Achilles heel for many companies, which is that revenue growth is slowing. And it's been much harder to generate growth in a slow economy, which we've seen slow further over the summer, and that's showing up in the earnings reports. And I think that's really what's sort of getting to investors right now, not the prospect of a Romney victory.
What do you make, though, in terms of the market and what's really led the gains this year, Russ, is that financials, consumer discretionary. I mean, you've seen, you know, it's not like everybody's running to safe havens either. At this point.
No, they're not. And, you know, I think you raise a great point, which is that it's been a risk-on market as much, if not more, than it's been risk-off for the year. And while there are a number of things you could point to, certainly we haven't seen some of the crisis people were worrying about in Europe. I think the big caveat, the big catalyst this year has been action by the world's central banks. We've had a huge injection of liquidity by the Fed and an open-ended commitment. We've had a huge injection of liquidity and another open-ended commitment by the ECB. We've had aggressive easing by the Bank of England. The Bank of Japan has jumped into the party. So you've really seen what I believe is mostly a liquidity-driven market, and also the fact that some of the tail risks that people were worried about coming into the year, particularly Europe, thankfully have not materialized.
Will the risk on continue, or it just depends what happens with the so-called fiscal cliff here?
Well, I think the fiscal cliff is now the big risk. You know, I'm going to quote a colleague of mine who, you know, refers to the fact that the market tends to focus on the shark closest to the boat. And for most of the last few years, that shark has been Europe. And now we're entering a period when Europe is not, you know, out of the woods, but it has stabilized. And as a result, I really do think if you think about the risks for the next 3 months, the big risk is in the U.S. in the form of the fiscal cliff, because it's big, it will hit the economy where it can least take it, which is the consumer. And I think as of this point, despite the fact we're all talking about it, it's still not discounted into the price.
That's interesting. How about we'll go to the fiscal cliff in a second, but how about the election itself? Is that in the price now? I mean, we've got polls out today, the Wall Street Journal poll, 47%, 47%. Do you expect stocks to move a whole lot between now and November 6th? Have people made up their minds?
Well, I think in terms of the election, no. I mean, this is still very much too close to call. We knew it was going to be a tight election. It's tied in more in recent weeks. So I don't think the market has come to a conclusion about the likely outcome. And I certainly don't think the market is pricing in a very high likelihood of going over the fiscal cliff. So I do think between now and the election, and maybe even after the election, because again, the fiscal cliff probably won't be settled, if at all, before the end of the year, markets are really going to be focused on U.S. politics and Washington.
Well, just between now and the 6th, the election day, what are the scenarios? We got about 45 seconds here for the market.
You know, I think between now and November, we're likely to see a choppy market. It doesn't mean you can't grind higher, but it's likely to be accompanied by more volatility than we witnessed in September. I think you are going to focus on earnings. My guess is you're largely range-bound for the next couple of weeks, and then investors will, of course, assess how the market looks after the election.
So, Russ, I mean, this could play out, the fiscal cliff could play out a couple of different ways, maybe depending on the presidential outcome, the election outcome, and so on, and whether or not folks in Washington want to play ball together. What should we do as an investor to kind of get ready, or should we wait until after the election?
Well, you know, Carol, I think there are a couple of things you can do. And again, some of these are longer term. Obviously, if we go over the fiscal cliff, if we have this fiscal drag, this is going to be a hit to the stock market. It's going to cause some short-term volatility. That said, we would expect that to be temporary. So, you know, perversely, that might actually create a buying opportunity. But that said, even leaving that aside, there are some good longer-term opportunities. We see the muni market right now is a very good place to be, even if you do go over the fiscal cliff. Another idea is that new investors have really benefited the last couple of years by having a strong home country bias. In other words, by having maybe more money than they should have invested in U.S. assets. And right now,
which have been what? Right, Mike, we had the story today about U.S. assets, U.S. stocks specifically, being what, the best asset class,
right, S&P.
This year.
It's been a great ride. I mean, U.S. stocks are up about 120% from their lows in 2009. They've, you know, rallied significantly from since the summer of 2010. But as a result, they're no longer the cheapest market. And there's some other places out there, whether it's Northern Europe, some more out-of-the-way places like Australia, New Zealand, Singapore, that actually look very inexpensive right now, support healthy dividend yields. And this might be a good time to take some of that overweight to the U.S. off a bit and think about international stocks as actually being safer if the U.S. becomes the big source of risk.
Which is interesting because Caterpillar would lead you to believe the opposite today.
Well, you know, Caterpillar was an interesting case, and it also illustrates one of the other issues where I think support the overseas argument, which is a lot of people have successfully played this emerging market theme, not by going out and buying emerging markets, but by buying companies like Caterpillar that are levered to emerging market sales. And I think the reason you're seeing companies like Caterpillar that maybe suffered a little bit of disappointment is that the valuations are not as cheap as they were a couple years ago. While conversely, if I look at the actual valuation on emerging market stocks, they're pretty reasonable. The EM trades at about a 20% discount to developed markets. So this might be the time to actually invest directly in those markets rather than investing in the proxies like Caterpillar.
But how patient do you need to be? I mean, you know, we've all said it whenever you look at emerging markets. You got a lot of patience. You got to have a strong stomach, especially considering all that's going on right now.
Absolutely. Look, I mean, these markets are more volatile. This is a longer-term theme, which is the growth you're likely to see in emerging markets. But that said, you know, one of the things to think about is that while emerging markets are likely to remain more volatile than places like the U.S., that difference may converge over time. And the reason is the volatility of a stock is largely driven by the volatility of the underlying economy. And given the fiscal cliff, given the unresolved nature of the debt issues in the U.S., the U.S. may be a little bit more volatile than it was in the past for some time, while many emerging markets are actually seeing more stable economies, and that should eventually translate into less volatility in their financial assets.
Russ, don't you think, though, maybe I'm giving politicians, lawmakers in Washington too much credit here, but don't you think that maybe there's going to be some initial wrangling, but nobody wants to go back to their home state and people saying, what are you doing? You know, you're wrangling, you're not making decisions, is causing us to lose jobs. It's causing our local economy to have problems. Don't you think there's going to be enough pressure that there will be steps taken forward to deal with this situation?
You know, eventually I do. The question is, when does it happen? So right now, most people, most investors, it's not unreasonable because we've seen this movie before. There's always an 11th hour compromise. Believe that will happen before the end of the year. And the challenge is we're seeing right now, it's going to be a very tight election. It's likely we're going to see some form of divided government. And it's not clear that all of these issues, again, we're talking about 4 or 5% of the economy in terms of the tax hikes and spending cuts that are on the line, mm-hmm. can get settled in the 7 weeks between November 7th and New Year's. Some of that may get settled after January. And right now, I'd suggest the market isn't necessarily prepared for that.
The market is not pricing it in because they believe that there will be something done.
Exactly. And, you know, perfect example, if you look at surveys of Wall Street economists, so there's 75 economists that were surveyed. Not one of them believes that first quarter growth will be negative. Now, most of us would say that if you really went over the fiscal cliff, there's a good chance that even if you eventually bounce back, that's going to be a significant drag on first quarter economic activity. So the fact that you don't have a single Wall Street economist, or at least none that were surveyed, forecasting negative GDP growth in Q1 tells me that a lot of people, again, believe this will be settled before January 1st.
Well, it gets back to what we were saying last summer when they were heading into the budget debates that eventually resulted in the downgrade. We kept saying, well, something will be done because it can't be that stupid.
Exactly. And also, I mean, the fiscal, the budget committee last year was another example. You know, the betting was that at the end of the day, through some combination of smoke and mirrors or actual cuts, that the super committee would find that nominal $1.2 trillion they needed to avoid the sequester that's now scheduled in on January 1st. And unfortunately, they didn't. So, you know, again, it is going to be a tough environment to settle some of these issues if you get divided government, which is very likely after the election.
And yet I'm told, I haven't looked, but you probably know, I'm told that people are not, the spending cuts are the other side of the fiscal cliff here, that people are not already taking it out on the, say, the defense contractors that would be affected. People haven't started selling them.
No, but I do think one thing that is happening is that, you know, CFOs and CEOs are rational. And even if they do believe you can eventually avoid the fiscal cliff, it does create some uncertainty. Companies and individuals don't know what their tax rate is going to be next year. And, you know, one of the drags we're likely to see as we get into the end of the year is if this isn't resolved, that creates a little bit of a headwind for both hiring and capital spending, which is another thing just to keep in the back of your mind. This may be a bit of a drag even if you don't actually go over the fiscal cliff.
Well, you talk. Rusk talks about volatility. Mm. Can you run through those and tell us what each one would entail?
Sure, absolutely. So, yeah, the names sound more fun than I think they'd be to go through. Mm. So the skydive is effectively what we were talking about, pardon me, before the break, which is that you can't reach a compromise during the lame duck session. You go over the fiscal cliff into January 1st. Theoretically, at some point in the new year, you do address it. But then that discussion becomes complicated by the impending debt ceiling. So that arguably would be the worst scenario, where really you go over the cliff with no expectation for when you're going to get back above it. The second one would be the bungee jump. Now, the bungee jump is similar to the skydive, but as the name implies, you have a court. And this would most likely happen if there was a Republican sweep. So Mr. Romney is elected, Republicans take the Senate, and there's some belief that even though you go over the cliff, it will be very quickly fixed retroactively as soon as the new Congress convenes. This scenario probably would lead to a little bit of an initial rally as investors were relieved that you're not, or at least not likely to see that worst case scenario. The third possibility, probably the most unlikely, but, you know, worth mentioning, is the hard stop, which is no matter who wins on November 6th, at some point during the lame duck session, you get to an agreement. There is some talk about avoiding at least part of the fiscal cliff and also a down payment on a larger, longer-term budget deal. That would be a good scenario. It's not the one we expect to be the most likely, but it's worth putting out there as well.
What are you betting on?
Well, you know, again, I think it is going to depend on the election. Obviously, if there's a Republican sweep, we do think that there will be some retroactive fit in early 2013. Now, at this point, you know, to punt a little bit, it is too close to call, not just the race for the White House, but also the race for the Senate. You've got an election right now that in the Senate looks awfully close to a 50-50 split. So this is going to be a long night. And I think whether you have that bungee cord scenario or whether you have the cliff dive will be in large part determined on the night of the 6th.
Interesting. Side point here, our ace statistics guru, Alex Tanzi, down in Washington, has calculated that the earliest that Barack Obama could win on election night, given the makeup of the states that would form his electoral majority, is 11 p.m. So if Obama's going to win, we're going to be up late. Whereas Romney, because he has strength in more easternmost states, I guess, in theory could, if everything went his way, win at 9 o'clock. So could be an early night, could be a late night.
Interesting to know. So let me ask you, Russ, if, you know, the fiscal cliff is certainly a large thing, a huge thing. We get through that. The bigger issue, though, is dealing with the longer-term fiscal management of our country. How much, if we get through the fiscal cliff, how much of that could be a drag on the outlook, the economy, and the markets?
Well, you know, this is interesting because, you know, in some ways I think that there's actually an opportunity there. Mostly because investors don't expect very much. So just as investors don't actually expect to go over the cliff, expect some kicking the can down the road. I don't think most of the investment community expects a long-term fix. So if you did get to a point in 2013 where there was a serious discussion about the budget, about tax simplification, broadening the base, dealing with long-term entitlements, then I think that could be a catalyst for a market rally. And, you know, again, the good news here is these problems are fixable. Certainly the issue on taxes, the issues as they relate to pensions, there are relatively straightforward economic solutions that most economists and experts would agree on. The problem is they're just politically difficult. So I don't know if you get to them in 2013 or if it's going to eventually take a crisis, mm-hmm. but if you could get to them, I think that would actually be good news for the markets.
What's the possibility that the markets create the crisis by reacting negatively to something not happening?
You know, I think it depends on how acute the issue is. Certainly, if we go over the fiscal cliff, if you have difficulty regarding the debt ceiling, the markets are going to react. I think, on the other hand, if you have another scenario where, let's say, this is pushed down the road for another year and there is no credible path to long-term fiscal reform, I don't think the markets are going to react that violently because, for the time being, there is no pressure on the U.S. government in terms of the bond market. You know, despite all of this, despite last year's downgrade, the reality is
we're just lucky it's a mess elsewhere.
It's a mess elsewhere. You know, we're, you use another phrase from a colleague of mine, Bob Dahl, we're the best house on a bad block.
Right.
And as long as the U.S. can borrow long for 1.7, 1.8%, there's not a tremendous amount of pressure on politicians. And perversely, that's one of the challenges, that unlike Europe that's forced to reform, we have some time. The question is, will we use it intelligently?
Will we get some pressure from outside investors who own a lot of our debt? And I'm thinking about China specifically. You know what's going on in the political world at this point. It's certainly China's become, once again, a political mm-hmm. punching bag. Just talk in your view, and it's not going to have significant consequences?
Yeah, you know, I don't think it's going to have significant consequences, at least in the near term. I traveled to Asia quite a bit. Obviously, the Chinese are aware of the risks associated with having this large position in U.S. Treasuries. But the truth is, China still runs a very large trade surplus. They need the liquidity of the U.S. market. And there's no obvious other place to go in the near term. So, yes, over the long term, China will diversify, but we still see large buying by the Chinese and more recently the Japanese. Mm. So I don't think the threat is coming from overseas, at least not in the next 6 to 12 months.
Well, the Chinese and Japanese are number 2 and 3 in terms of bond ownership in the United States. Federal Reserve
yes.
is number 1. And in almost all of your scenarios, it said Fed policy becomes paramount. What do you mean by Fed policy? Is there going to be a change in Fed policy, or just the fact that they're in it to win it, in it forever, QE infinity?
Well, certainly, you know, the Fed pursuing their policy, pursuing QE3, if you believe the expectations in the bond market, they're likely to extend Operation Twist. This will take some of the pressure off because, you know, to the question a moment ago, as you point out, the Fed is the biggest buyer. And as long as they're in the market, that will help mitigate the risk of a buyer strike in Treasuries because the largest buyer is price insensitive. But that said, I think one thing to keep in mind, if we go over the fiscal cliff, I think we're facing a bad economic outcome no matter what the Fed does.
Well, that's probably true because even, the scenario that you talk about in part with your report today and that others, we'll talk to Stan Collender about it in a few minutes, we go past the cliff. We fall off the cliff as part of a strategy that, you know, once you get past it, then you can go back and make changes more easily. But even that messes up the economy because companies don't know how much to withhold from your pay. People don't know how much to pay in taxes, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly. And then there's the real, you know, the real drag you're going to get from higher taxes on a consumer that has very little income growth, still has too much debt, and a weak labor market. So even if it's a modest drag, let's say the payroll tax holiday expires and there's some hike in marginal rates for upper income individuals, again, it may not be a huge number. We might be talking 1 to 2% of GDP. But in an economy that's only growing 1 to 2%, you do bring the U.S. dangerously close to stall speed. And under that scenario, I'm not sure Fed action is going to do much to mitigate that risk.
Russ, have you ruled out completely the idea of a recession in all of your investment theories for the next 6 to 12 months?
No, we haven't. And I think, you know, if, again, it's going to be very dependent on the outcome, but in the worst case scenario, where you go over the cliff, So the full brunt of those tax hikes and spending cuts hit. They're not addressed immediately. There's a decent chance you go into at least a mild recession in 2013. This is a view shared by the Congressional Budget Office, which has forecasted that if you go over the cliff and you stay over it, rather than a modest expansion in 2013, you're probably looking at a mild recession. So, you know, this is a risk, because certainly that is not discounted into prices at this point.
So it sounds to me like you're saying, there are investment strategies, and yet it's almost like we shouldn't take advantage of much until the election, because so much can go in so many different directions.
Well, certainly there's a lot of uncertainty. And again, I think that it's reasonable for investors to be a bit more defensive. That does not necessarily mean, you know, taking everything out of the market and going into cash. As I mentioned before, there are some good opportunities out there. Muni bonds are likely to do well in under either scenario. Maybe they'll come under a little bit of pressure if there's some belief there'll be real tax reform. But that's certainly one place to look. Outside of the United States, we do see some good values. And yes, other markets will be hit if the U.S. goes over the cliff. But for the first time in a long time, they may actually go down less than the United States if we're the source of the crisis.
All right. We just got about 90 seconds left here. So, Russ, I like to ask this of a lot of our guests. You know, what keeps you up at night at this point?
Well, you know, again, it's probably what we've been spending most of the time talking about. You know, Europe, again, I don't want to underestimate the challenges ahead. There's a lot of structural reform that has to happen in Europe. But I do think one advantage Europe has right now is there's significant pressure on the politicians to keep that reform going. I think the challenge in the U.S. is we really haven't had that pressure. And as a result, we haven't really started addressing the fiscal issues, either the near-term ones in the form of the fiscal cliff or the longer-term ones in terms of, you know, U.S. debt and the entitlement state. So this is a big issue. It's something that's going to affect both the near-term term and the long term, and it's going to be one case where policy really will impact the markets. If we can get it right, it's going to help, and if we don't, you know, again, buckle up.
Yeah, I think I'm going to invest in seatbelts.
And avoid the bungee jumping.
Yeah.
If we can. Hey, Russ, thank you so much. We've been talking with Russ Kostrich. He's chief investment strategist over at BlackRock iShares, and a great paper from him, U.S. Election Cliffhanger, so lots of good information there.
Listen to Bloomberg on the Economy weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2012.